Hey, thanks for listening to episode 17 of the Great American Folk Show, a little place in this space where we celebrate the craft and community of art and the people who make it. I've always wanted to say that. I am most definitely not Tom Brusseau, but the producer of this show, Eric Deatherage. And today we're kind of turning the tables around on your beloved host. We're holding a mirror up to him. We're putting him on the hot seat. As we introduce, if you've not met him yet, or reintroduce you to what this homegrown talent is all about. Always down for a little fun gag, a little gimmick. I mean, dude sang a cappella walking around New York City in a barber shop, after all. It's Tom Brusseau. How about that for a walk-up?
I want to give you an A+. My friend.
I spent all night writing that one, huh?
Well, I want to thank you for turning the tables. It's been a little while since I've done this, Eric.
Yeah, I know. It's like, this is your first radio interview in many moons after hosting a radio show for what now, 4 years?
Oh my gosh, it's got to be 4 years. Let's just call it a solid 4 years.
Let's round it up and call it four. Why not? All right. They're not here to hear me yakety yak. They're here to hear you sing. That's what we're doing today. We're having you strum a guitar and sing a song. What you got for us from your back catalog, sir?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I got to tell you, when you first mentioned to me this idea of turning the tables, I wanted to bring out something, a brand new song, something that I've been working on, something I've been thinking about for a long time. And this is what one might call a song that one might have found in an old piano bench somewhere that I wrote. I kind of harnessed that feel. And it's based on our North Dakota state flower. It's called the Prairie Rose.
Tom Brusseau on the Great American Folk Show podcast. We are turning the tables on him today. He gave us the North Dakota homespun, My Prairie Rose. And Tom, beautiful. Nice job on that. Now, anybody that knows you, anybody that has found out about you, looking you up, or just listening to you over the years and judging by the songs that you write, they know that you're from North Dakota, Grand Forks specifically, and that you wear your hometown on your sleeve. You've even named records after it, including one chronicling the flood of 97. So what makes Grand Forks special, almost mythological to you?
You know, North Dakota is just a series of feelings and of vibes that I've collected over my lifetime. And then even more, I feel like in my own life, I've always been in this environment where I get to go to the edge of town and I get to look out at this beautiful landscape and feel the elements. I'm an elemental person, and I try to harness that, I guess, whenever I write songs about North Dakota. And be it I'm writing songs about North Dakota in North Dakota or elsewhere, well, you might just say that I'm one of these people who has North Dakota on the brain and in the heart. But what that's comprised of, oh my gosh, I don't know. Stardust, wheat dust, mud. That cold air that comes straight down from Canada that keeps us all humble and handsome, hopefully. and the remembrances of all of those people, my family and others that came to this part of the world once upon a time. I just feel so much a part of that. We have this other character in Grand Forks. It's not a person. It's not a location. It's not something that even has a voice so much, but it's very much a character, and that character is the Red River. We have this other thing that is very much a lifeline, that is very much a carrier of those stories and experiences of the past. That is where the civilization came to at one point, and that is the Red River, this mysterious thing that flows from the south to the north. In some ways, this is a tattoo on my soul. In some ways, I'm very fearful of it, because still to this day, I've never really even dipped my finger into the Red River.
Really?
Because it's just it's kind of this force. I'm almost afraid to. I'm afraid that I might become part of it.
It is kind of like this friction. You know, it's interesting. You talk about the winds from the north coming from Canada, and you got this river that flows from the south to the north. It's almost like this friction, and there's something sort of mystical about that friction that's in the air in Grand Forks.
I think you described it perfectly in that one sentence. Mystical and magical and cosmic, spiritual. These are the things that my DNA is made up out of.
So, Tom, trace it back. Trace it way back. What sparked your interest in music as a kid?
Colors. Baby blue and flaxen wheat and the white of snow. The sparkling diamonds that come up from the ground and all around and create a swirl in the wintertime. Smells. Basement. Watery coffee and pot roasts and a heartiness. It's abstract, totally abstract. And perhaps that's also what I'm getting at, is this thing that is so hard to define, but yet it just kind of keeps you interested. I'm inspired by these things in my youth, antiques and faces with deep lines and thick Scandinavian accents from rural areas. All of this is a part of, like, my foundation. And, of course, you know, as I've gotten to be older, I can place some names to those faces. But it's just all a mix of smells and textures and temperatures. I mean, elements, I guess. I'm talking about the elements.
Some of what you're describing sort of plays into what some people know of you. And I doubt if you'd be offended if I say a lot of folks describe you as kind of an old soul. A fresh Scandinavian face, but an older soul. Did you always feel that when you were a kid?
I always did. You know, I when I was growing up, I was in love, just in the pure sense of the word, with some of the idols that were presented to my age group, pop idols and movie star idols. Man, I had a picture of Lyle Lovett on my wall. I had a picture of Rick Springfield. But I always was so much more interested in what my grandparents were doing. I was always interested in what they were wearing, in what music they were listening to, and the time they took when they spoke, how they took their time, how they didn't rush anything, and they were diligent. These things, to me, took years to really adopt, but I was just interested in a group of people that were so instrumental in the direction of the world, but were kind of dying out at the same time. And I've always been sad to see them go, but I've always been able to connect with them. When I've gone back to those books, when I've gone back to that music and those movies, I don't know why. I guess maybe all of this made me kind of an outsider as a kid.
So as a kid in school, elementary school, like what group did you associate with? Were you a loner? Were you athletic? Or what was a kid that felt the things that you felt like at that age, at that tender age?
I probably wasn't this way. If you ask somebody else, if you ask some of my childhood friends or family, but the way that I remember how I was as a kid is no different than how I am now. That I've considered myself an omniscient person, a ghost. And my favorite spots in any building, in any classroom, and in anywhere was always in a corner looking out at people.
Did your teacher ever get on you for daydreaming?
All the time. All the time, Eric. And I remember even some of the papers that I wrote when I was growing up, whether it was a study on a book or a creative writing exercise. A few of my teachers, after having read what I wrote, always commented that they felt very dislocated by what I had to say. So I think in my lifetime, what I've really had to work on is defining what it is that I want to say. And it just so happened to be that music was going to be the vehicle to help me do that.
So what came kind of first, or did it all come together, the songwriting element of your music, or the music part of your music? I know that there are touchtones musically that appear now in your music that you mention often, like the Carter Family. Describe like the, you know, where and when the songwriting and your guitar playing kind of came together.
For lack of a better way of putting it, out of being able to find a confidant, a close friend, a buddy, a pal, music was that for me. The guitar was that for me. But I discovered the music portion of songwriting later in life. But writing, I've always just been able to sit down and put the pen to the paper. Having a point about writing, I think, comes much later. But when I was first starting out, the things that I was saying, I know, was very wild in nature and dislocated and without any point, without an end or a beginning, always just somewhere in the middle, picking up a thread. And maybe to a certain extent, I still showcase that in what songwriting I've evolved today. I don't know if there is a beginning or an end with my writing. There's just something in the middle.
So, you know, a lot of songwriters, Tom, will say, oh, yeah, I was influenced by Dylan or John Prine or whomever. But your songwriting is sort of hard to describe. I mean, you've mentioned elemental and things like that. It's very rooted in place. But who are your songwriting specific heroes that you really gravitated towards at any point in your life?
They would be songwriters that I wouldn't even know if I would have a name to. They would be the songwriters who wrote hymnals. Mm. They would be the songwriters who wrote some of those early country songs. And I'm talking about 40s and 30s that other people had hits with. These very skilled writers who could say things so perfectly and do it with brevity. Also, too, when I was in elementary school, we were so fortunate to have music in the classroom. And one of my music teachers introduced our class to the songbook of great American folk songs. Ah. So we were learning Guantanamera and the history of that song and why it's important. We were learning John Henry, this song about this character who was so strong and who was so disciplined and who challenged the machine, in the end won for it, but also in the end perished because of it. This heroic character. You know, these songs of story, the Erie Canal song, for example, about something historical that took place, the hardship or the injustice. And then, you know, much later in elementary school, we learned Scarborough Fair. This is songs about many things, but it could be a song about love and loss. These songs were food and nourishment. These were ingredients that I didn't know that I needed. That when I first heard them, they just were what I thrived on. And then I began just consuming more of these songs, and I got lucky. I got so lucky because there's music in my family on both sides, but because I had a grandfather and great-grandfather who had an extensive record collection with these animated album covers. I mean, they're almost telling you, you have no idea what you're about to play, but I want you to go ahead and open up the sleeve and take out the record and put it on the record player and put that needle down and hear what I have to say. And that was hours and hours of my youth, days, years of my youth, just listening to music that an older generation cherished and loved and thank God held on to.
Can the title of your radio show, The Great American Folk Show, in this podcast be credited to that music teacher?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, unfortunately, it could be dedicated to all those abstract things that I was mentioning, but then also this body of music that we have in the United States. That's the rock. Those are the rocks.
So jump forward a little bit, Tom, to your trek to the West Coast. How you wound up there, how you settled there in the San Diego folk scene, and how your career kind of took off from there.
Well, I blew there. I had no direction. I mean, you know, I was in Utah working seasonally for the Sundance Film Festival, and I wanted to do music, but I didn't know really where to go. And I just blew there. I was like a piece of paper in the wind. And it landed me in Southern California. This is a place that I never, ever conceived of going, even though, you know, this is where a lot of the entertainment is in the world. But I just kind of blew there. And when I got there, I didn't even intend to stay. But somebody introduced me to the local music scene, and it became evident to me that this was going to be the place that I would put down roots for a little while. And shortly thereafter, living in San Diego and developing my craft a little bit more, I started to get airplay on a radio station in Santa Monica, California, KCRW. And I could no longer live in San Diego. I had to live up in Los Angeles. And then from there, I had so many people helping me. You know, I think that's the one thing about anybody who's able to sustain themselves on their art. They're able to do that because there are other people who believe in what they're doing. And there are many, many hands that help them do it.
Well, you know, when you're there in Los Angeles and Nick Harcourt's playing, you know, the famous DJ at KCRW is playing your stuff and people are coming to your shows more, like, first of all, what did that feel like? And B, how did you speak to crowds about where you came from? How did you represent?
The part of me being on stage and explaining to people where I came from was very easy because I'd been doing it for a couple of years by then. And if anything, that was the thing that I would talk about before I would even play a song. And in many ways, that was the thing that made me feel comfortable about being on the stage in that big city in front of people that some of them I didn't know, and some of them were there because the place might have been a hot spot to see, you know, budding songwriters. And some of those people were actors and actresses. At any given point, you could look out and pretty much see that actor or actress that you'd grown up seeing on the TV or in movies. And I would set the tone a little bit right from the get-go by just introducing myself very simply, saying, my name is Tom Brousseau, I'm from Grand Forks, North Dakota. That one thing alone, I think, gave people an indication as to what they could be about to hear, and it also helped me feel a little bit comfortable about delivering it to them. It felt good. It felt natural. I didn't feel like a ghost. I wasn't so much an observer. Now I was a person who is able to open up his heart and his head and whatever talents he had on the guitar and in his voice to these people. And to a certain extent, it still is. This is my time to be able to share with people who I am. And hopefully, you know, through my songs, I was able to do that.
your transformation from a ghost. I'm sure like it also was alluring too. You might say, hi, I'm Tom Brusseau. I'm from Grand Forks, North Dakota. You say that people kind of expect something. I bet a lot of people didn't know what to expect. It was kind of opening, unlocking a mystery box for them. And I'm sure that that was, you know, a bit exotic for those in the crowd. Now, you did mention that there were some actors, famous people. You made many friends out there, including some famous ones, some of whom, many of whom actually, who have shown up on the Great American Folk Show. Why is forming and maintaining friendships like that so important in this line of work?
These are the people who might truly be the only ones right off the bat who understand what you're doing. I've often heard, as a particular songwriter, being labeled a singer-songwriter's songwriter. You know, in other words, someone that other artists go to because they just immediately connect with them. John Prine, for example, I've heard that said about him. But looking out in the audience, I remember spotting Catherine O'Hara. I remember spotting Viggo Mortensen, and I remember spotting Sidney Pollack. I mean, certainly people probably know who Viggo Mortensen is. And back, you know, in 2004 when I was playing, 2003 when I was playing this place called Largo, I mean, he was still, you know, he's the king.
Lord of the Rings, right?
He was the king in Lord of the Rings. But Catherine O'Hara, I mean, my gosh.
One of the funniest comics in the world in movies and TV shows.
So funny.
Hilarious.
So beautiful.
Moira,
so versatile. So so unique.
Yes.
And then Sidney Pollack too, whom I knew as a director, also an actor, and I just couldn't believe that he was there. And I had the opportunity to go up to him afterward and shake his hand and tell him how much his art meant to me. I've never met anyone, God rest his soul, with as strong of a handshake. I mean, even to this day, if I shake a hand and somebody squeezes it too hard, I think of Sidney Pollack.
Oh, this is catnip, Tom. Thank you for this. Now, my burning question is, okay, you're a good-looking guy. You have features that would work for the camera. Why ain't you in movies?
I think I would be good in a movie if I didn't have any speaking lines.
You could just play the ghost, you know?
I could just hopefully be that, like, Tom Waits character, you know, who's all dressed in denim and has a thing or two to say, but is more or less a presence.
Hey, it sounds pretty good to me.
One of my first album releases was for a record I did on Loveless Records called What I Mean to Say Is Goodbye. Mm-hmm. Was such a surprise for me because I really hadn't been at it that long. You know, it was a record label, and this was something that back then it was imperative. You needed to connect with a record label and have a campaign, and that would be the thing that would, you know, allow you to tour around as if you had a record. And so my friend Sam Jones, who produced this record, we had an album release party at Largo, and I was just so happy. It was a sold out show, and I was able to have some friends come up and join me. But then I just so wanted to be done with the show too, so I could greet people and tell them thank you, which I did. And as I was greeting people as they were leaving and selling a t-shirt and a record, I just knew there was something out of the corner of my eye. This beautiful woman was slowly making her way down the line to thank me or to tell me that the show was good or to say what a fun time they had. It was Monica Lewinsky.
Monica Lewinsky is one of your fans.
Monica Lewinsky. And I didn't know what to say, but we had this moment where she was smiling and I was smiling. And she thanked me and I said, thank you. And we had this big hug. Oh. And I just was so, so pleased that I was able to do this album release and that I was able to connect with people. And you know, that's the thing about these shows at Largo is that everyone is in the same boat. It doesn't matter who you are, what you've done. People who were there to see shows were in the same boat. And what a lovely time that was, as you can imagine.
Wow. And knowing what all Monica Lewinsky went through and just the hell she went through in her life, that had to be nice to see her smiling and enjoying your work like that.
Amazing. And to a certain extent, I'm so glad that she was contemplating this album, which was all about North Dakota.
Mr. Ambassador, so we are turning the tables on the host with the most, North Dakota representing Tom Bruce. So today, of course, you are listening to the Great American Folk Show podcast. I don't have to tell you that. You come this far. So we're doing a live session. I'm Eric Dethridge in Fargo, and that's Tom Brusso in Medora. And through the magic of, internet technology, we're together. So, Tom, we're going to go back to your hometown for our next song, and I don't think this one needs much setup.
Eric, I think I'm going to do one that I wrote for an album called Grand Forks, and this one is simply called The Flood of 1997.
Down along the banks of the mighty Red, the river was slowly rising out of bed. The warmer it got, the stronger she became. She's gonna be a household name. Well, think of all the power needed to put forth, flowing from the south on up to the north, from the Lonesome Valley to Lake Winnipeg, a body of water with many a leg. We're gonna need them all if we're gonna save our town. Release the kids from school and shut the schools down. Send out a message. We need the desert sand. We need every able body and every able hand. Where people come together, form into a chain. People come together, form into a train. Fill the bags with sand, tie them tight with twine. When this is finished, send them on down the line. Stretch to the max and put to the test. No real sign that the river was gonna crest. Leaks on the levee, worms in the yard. A state of emergency was declared, and then they called in the guard. The first thing they'd done was put a wall of clay down Belmont Road. It was very little time in such a heavy load. The second thing they'd done was later in the eve. They came around to tell us, folks, it's time to leave. The red rose o'er the barrier and then began to drown. All the lower lying areas of town. It was a matter of time before she would arrive. All the pretty houses down along Reeves Drive. Into every shop, into every hall, every corner, in to every mall, to the pews in every church, to the stools in every bar, to everybody's basement, to everybody's car.
Flood of 1997, and if you lived in Grand Forks, North Dakota, or were adjacent to it, or just knew about it, then you know what that was all about. From his Grand Forks album, a live version exclusive to the Great American Folk Show podcast, I'm Eric Dethridge. Tom, why did you decide to move back to Grand Forks and set up shop here and do this little radio show and podcast that folks are listening to now, and your summer gig in Medora where you're at? What brought you back to North Dakota?
I don't think that I ever left, but I knew that in a roundabout way, I would always come back to North Dakota to live at some point. I just didn't know when that was going to be. I'm not one of these people who can't wait to get away from where they came from. I'm just the opposite. I love where I come from so much. And I've always wanted to be a part of North Dakota. You know, if I left for a little while, that would be fine. I don't know if I could dictate how long I would be gone for, but I knew that I would come back home. And I think that I know that I'm going to die in North Dakota and be buried here. It was never a question of would I, it just was more of a question of when my little piece of paper would blow back to North Dakota. And it just happened around 2020. Mm-hmm. But I started this radio program because I had a dream. I had a vision one night. I woke up from it. There was a grand sign that came up out of the Prairie Sea. It was a big awning, and it said what I thought was the Great American Folk Show. And it was just this big, beautiful, beaming thing, and that I would need to lasso it and bring it back down and try to make sense of it. And I remember waking up the next day and going over to my parents' place. I was home visiting when I had this vision, and I just sitting my dad down and saying, "Dad, I had this vision. I had this dream. I don't even know if it was a dream. Was I even awake? Am I even really here right now? I have no idea. But I had this thing, this calling. It called out to me in my dream that I would be doing this." And that was in 2017. And it was always going to be a radio show. And the big on-air sign would come on, and I would be up on the stage with a microphone. But I wouldn't be sharing my story, per se, or maybe I would be sharing my story, but it would be through the experiences of other people. And, you know, of course, I've had to kind of redefine it and figure out, you know, how I could even make something like that possible. And eventually, you know, I pitched it to Prairie Public Broadcasting, and that was the start of it. And this is a thing that is kind of, it's an ever-evolving thing, the Great American Folk Show. I mean, the more people we have on, Eric, the more stories that are shared, the more guests we reach out to, the identity of the show changes. I don't know if it becomes more refined or if it becomes more of a broader thing. I have no idea, but it's apparent to me now that the identity of the show is and will be because of the people that we have on the program sharing their experiences.
Well, I have to say that's, you know, part of your secret ingredient and your secret sauce. I think people will pick up on that, is that you're very deferential to your guests. You want their story, their art to be what jumps out at people, what's consumed. And that's part of the reason why we're doing this little gag today and turning things on you, because I know folks are very interested, yes, in your guests and what they have to share, but they are just excited to hear more from the host and your talents. It's always great to hear you sing on the show. It's a rare thing, but once in a while, it's always catnip for everybody listening. So I got to ask you this question, Tom. As a settled down dad now, in the place of your childhood, Grand Forks, how has inspiration for songwriting changed? Are you writing songs about your kids now, or how has that morphed?
I think I've been writing songs about my kids even before I've had kids.
I believe that.
But it's interesting. The writing process, maybe any art discipline, is constantly evolving. I'm writing more these days like character sketches. Mm-hmm. I'm writing more probably like the authors that I really connected to back before I was even writing music, like the Spoon River Anthology and Flannery O'Connor and these wonderful stories by John Fonte and Eudora Welty and Faulkner and J.D. Salinger. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if I'm even writing songs. Hmm. And I don't even know if I don't think that I am, actually. I don't even know if I can call myself a songwriter. I just don't know. I don't know what I am. I really don't. I know that I love to sing and write and play music, but I don't know. I don't really think I'm a songwriter anymore. I think I'm just a person who happens to put narratives to music.
Well, always humble, Tom Brousseau. But I'll share with you, dear listener, not too long ago, you may have heard Tom's freshly penned song about the late great Mayor Pat Owens of Grand Forks. I don't know. I gave you an assignment like, hey, can you just write a little song about Pat Owens? And you're like, yep. And I don't know. That same day, I think it was, I got a song. So I would still call you a songwriter and a potentially prolific one at that. Tom, what more do you want to accomplish in your career, musically and otherwise?
Well, I want to continue with this thread of folk music. I want to continue writing about things that have happened, not just in North Dakota, but our experiences, our collective experiences. And I'm an investigator that way, a detective. I just love turning the page. And so many songwriters, what they do is they write a song, they're proud of it, but they don't linger on it. They go right on to the next one. This is, you can't stop this once you have the bug for it. And so I want to continue doing this modern folk music and at the same time, keep on digging back into the Great American Folk Songbook and learn more about these songs from these beautiful cultures that we have in the United States and beyond. It's important to me to connect with voices from the past, and folk music for me is a way to connect with everybody, people I've never met, like the Carter family, or the people that I once knew and loved, like my music teacher in elementary school, Mrs. Wharton, my grandfather Dean, and my great-grandfather Buck, whom I never had a chance to meet. I'll just continue doing these things.
You're listening to The Great American Folk Show. I'm Eric Detheridge. Tom Brousseau is our guest. Yes, the host is the guest today, so I get to do the closing credits. So, support for The Great American Folk Show comes from the John and Elaine Andrist Charitable Trust, the estate of Blair Flegel, the Lorak family, and Minn Kota Power Cooperative. I am Eric Detheridge. Pleasure pinch hitting in the host chair for Tom Brousseau as we turn the tables on him with this live session today. Now, Tom, you're going to give the people what they want and send us out with a favorite of yours. For those that don't know this song, that haven't heard it, and I'm sure there are a couple that are new to this podcast and new to you, tell them about this song.
Well, first of all, Eric, I want to thank you for turning the tables. I always feel like whenever I'm talking about myself, I've talked too much. And I've probably said the wrong thing, and that no one's going to find any of this interesting, but
well,
I've enjoyed it.
Tom, if they've come this far and they're hearing your voice, they must. They must have found it interesting.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you. Well, I appreciate it. No, I've enjoyed every second of it. Thank you for your thoughtful questions.
Thanks,
You're
man.
You're very, very good at this. Very good at this.
That's
and
fun.
You've made me feel comfortable as a guest, Eric.
Good. That's,
so
that's,
thank you.
That's my job. That's my. That's, yeah. that's your job. But today it's my job. Yeah.
Well, I thought maybe what I would do is play a song that that I wrote a few years ago when I was living in Venice, California. And I was in my bathroom, and which is it tends to be the place where I go when I want to like get away from the world and write music. The bathroom is a really, really great spot.
Wait, you write most of your songs or some of your songs in the bathroom? In the jar?
Well, or
the bog,
a closet or a bedroom or, you know, someplace that is just going to be room enough for me and hopefully has good acoustics.
I was going to say, bathroom's got good acoustics. Not a bad choice.
When in doubt.
Yes.
But, this little riff came to me, and it's kind of based on a Cajun melody. Oh. There's a little wistfulness to it, and the original Cajun song that I'm sure that I was influenced by also has this wistfulness, and Cajun music is, to me, is I love it so much because of that, and I didn't have the lyrics for it, but I had a little melody on the guitar. And the melody just seemed to fit a phrase so perfectly. We were meant to be together. We were meant to be together. And this is almost like the melody was talking. And so from it, I expanded it into a song. And definitely wouldn't have been the song that it was without my friend Sean Watkins bringing more life to it and light. But I wanted to play it for you, and I think that it's a very positive song, and I hope everyone will enjoy this version of it.
There's no way to start the song, but somebody once told me, well, you just got to start the song. It's easier said than done. We could begin with that Cajun chord. But you got to breathe in. Just let it go. But you want to hold on to it for a little while longer. But you got to remember how bittersweet it is to know that we were meant to be together. Something completely new, and all of a sudden people don't know what to do. Let them have their say. I for one ain't even gonna look that way. We were